Good evening, my fellow Americans. I would like to talk to you tonight about a great change that has quietly taken place in the American political scene. Most generations do not see the turning points in history in which they play a part. These great movements are perceived long afterwards. Historians looking back in American history can spot the fundamental shifts. There was the time just after the era of good feeling when Andrew Jackson reintroduced the two-party system in America. There was the time after the collapse of the Whig Party of a new coalition which became the Republican Party. And there was the time 35 years ago when Franklin Roosevelt assembled a democratic coalition of organized labor, minority groups, and the Solid South. That last assemblage of power blocks dominated the middle third of the 20th century in America. But as we enter the last third of this century, it is time we recognized a profound change that has taken place in American politics. Without most of us realizing it, a new alignment has been formed. Most Americans have not been aware that this new alignment has been gathered together. And yet it has happened, and it is an exciting development. This new alignment is already a new majority. It will affect the future of all Americans for generations to come, whether they are part of it or not. The new majority is not a grouping of power blocks, but an alliance of ideas. Men and women of all backgrounds, of all ages, of all parties are coming to the same conclusions. Many of these men and women belong to the same blocks that formed the old coalitions. But now, thinking independently, they have all reached a new conclusion about the direction of our nation. Their very diversity of background provides a basis for a new unity for America. Listen to the conclusion as expressed by one group, the most visible one, voiced by many Republicans for many years. This nation has become great not by what government has done for people, but by what people have done for themselves. The more centralized and domineering a government gets, the less personal freedom there is for the individual. The role of government is to do for people what they cannot do for themselves, to open up new opportunities, to mobilize private energies to meet public needs, to protect and defend every citizen, to create a climate that enables every person to fulfill himself to the utmost in his own way and by his own choice. That's the Republican voice, the voice of both liberals and conservatives within the party, and its good sense is becoming more appealing to millions of Democrats and independents. That traditional Republican thinking is the wellspring of the new alignment. But there is another voice saying much the same thing in a different form. It is the voice of the new liberal. The voice of the new liberal calls for a workable form of participatory democracy. It demands a political order close to the people who are governed, in which the people play a vital part. That voice demands more personal freedom, less government domination. Thoughtful critics like Daniel Moynihan and Richard Goodwin, both liberals, are giving the word another dimension. A century ago, to be liberal meant to be against the domination of governmental authority, to put personal liberty ahead of the dictates of the state. Only recently has the term liberal come to mean the dependence on federal action to meet people's needs. The future meaning of liberal is likely to return to the reliance on personal freedom, but it will have a difference. It will see that a key role of government is to provide incentives for the free enterprise system to accept more social responsibility. In that context, liberals and conservatives will find themselves coming closer together rather than splitting apart. Just as there is a difference between the New Deal liberal and the new liberal, there is a big difference between the new liberal and the new left. The new liberal recognizes that progress and order go hand in hand. The extremists of the new left strongly and even violently disagree. They feel, quite wrongly, I believe, that they have to tear down in order to build, shaking society to its foundations, leading us to anarchy. The new left has a passion. The new liberal has a program. And yet I have a feeling that many of the young people who call themselves new leftists now are in fact far more closely attuned to the voice of the new liberal. When it comes to a choice between getting something off your chest or getting something done, sooner or later most people choose to get something done. There is a third voice, the voice of the new South. Not the old South of the 30s of automatic voting habits and a declining economy. The new South is no longer prisoner of the past, no longer bound by old habits or old grievances or the old racist appeals. The new South is building a new pride, focusing on the future, pressing forward with industrial development through resurgent private enterprise, forging a new place for itself in the life of the nation. And politically, the New South is in ferment. It is breaking the shackles of one-party rule. Its new voices are interpreting the old doctrines of states' rights in new ways, those of making state and local governments responsive to state and local needs. There is a fourth voice, the voice of the black militant. There is a deep and widening division between today's black leadership and the doctrinaire welfarist. When you listen to these black voices, you hear little about handouts or welfare. Instead, you hear the words dignity, ownership, pride. They do not want to be recipients. They want to be participants. The message of giveaway, of handout, of permanent welfare is no longer of interest to people who want dignity and self-respect. What we can and should do immediately is to respond to their demands for a share of American opportunity, for a legitimate role in private enterprise. There is a fifth element to the new alignment, a non-voice, if you will. That is the silent center, the millions of people in the middle of the American political spectrum who do not demonstrate, who do not picket or protest loudly. We must remember that all the center is not silent, and all who are silent are not center. But a great many quiet Americans have become committed to answers to social problems that preserve personal freedom. They reject the answers of the 30s to the problems of today. And as this silent center has become a part of the new alignment, it has transformed it from a minority into a majority. That is why we are witnessing a significant breakthrough toward what America needs, peaceful, orderly progress. My point is this. These voices, the Republicans, the new liberals, the new South, the black militants, are talking the same language. Let's not oversimplify. The voices are not joined in any harmonious chorus. Far from it. The ideas of the new alignment differ in emphasis, but they do not conflict the way that the old alliance of power blocks used to conflict. The differences within the new alignment are differences of emphasis, not of fundamentals. Differences in the speed of change, not so much in the direction of change. Now the new alignment's greatest need is to communicate with all of its elements rather than to march along in parallel lines that never converge. You can be sure that the members of the old power blocks will try at first to dismiss this new majority as just an assortment of strange bedfellows. But despite the differences in appearance, despite the differences in ways and means, despite the lack of communication, despite all the pains of realignment, the fundamental agreement is there. Even men who find each other disagreeable at first can find themselves in agreement. I do not claim to be the only one who notices the formation of this new alignment. On the campaign trail today, you can see the politicians of the old order adjusting their appeals. It may be awkward, but they speak about more federal billions now for the cities in one breath, and then in the next breath, they talk of an end to the old welfare system and a return to private enterprise. These politicians, of course, are trying to have it both ways. On the one hand, they're reluctant to abandon the old power alliances that have served them so well in the past, but on the other hand, they don't want to miss the new boat as it leaves the dock. People today and the political figures who appeal to them will have to make the hard choice, whether to cling to the old power block alliances of the middle third of this century or to join the new alignment of ideas that will shape the final third of this century. And therein lies the great excitement of this new alignment. Right now, we see our differences all too clearly. In the future, those of us in the new alignment will see our similarity of methods and goals much more clearly. The mark of a good insight is when everyone says, of course, that's what I've been thinking all along, only I never put it that way. And that is what is at the heart of the new alignment, the crystallization of what is on the minds of the American people today. Tomorrow, as we focus the new movement more clearly, America will gain a new unity. We will not seek the false unity of consensus, of the glossing over of fundamental differences, of the enforced sameness of government regimentation. We will forge a unity of goals, recognized by men who also recognize and value their own diversity. That is the great advantage of an alignment of ideas over the coalition of power blocks. As we coalesce the elements of this new alignment, some surprising things will begin to happen. As frustration ends, violence will wane. As runaway government is curbed, personal freedom will grow. As demeaning welfare systems are replaced, individual initiative will take the lead. As peace returns to the American city, America will be better able to build peace in the world. The new alignment speaks in many accents, approaches its point from many directions, but the common message is there, and here it is. People come first. Government is their servant. The best government is closest to the people, most involved with people's lives. Government is formed to protect the individual's life, property, and rights, and to help the helpless, not to dominate a person's life or to rob him of his self-respect. The concept is great, not because it is new, but because it is right and it is relevant. Victor Hugo pointed out that there's nothing so powerful as an idea whose time has come. The time has come for this idea. No one leader has drawn together this new alignment. It has been drawn together by the magnet of an idea that is right for our time, that speaks to us now, that has special meaning today. How do you become part of the new alignment? You don't have to be a member of any special party or any union. You're not required to live in any region or any city. You don't have to be rich or poor, young or old. Because we're not dealing with blocks, we're dealing with an idea. If you believe that people do come first, if you believe that dignity must replace the dole, if you believe that order and progress go hand in hand, if you are idealistic about personal freedom, then you don't have to worry about where to go to join the new alignment. You are already a part of it. The great realignments of our history did not take place in normal and quiet times. They took place when America was in trouble, or when the existing majority could not come to grips with the needs of the nation. And so, without realizing it, a new majority is formed, and it lasts as long as it meets the need for change. That is what we mean by the collective wisdom of the people. This is the unspoken voice of America, in its majesty and its mystery, demanding articulation by men who sense its new meaning. That is why new faces with more of the old answers miss the point. That is why new leadership is needed now. Leadership with the proven record of fighting for the action that the new majority now demands. No man can predict the ultimate shape of the alignment that is happening in America today. But I do know this. It is alive. It is moving forward. It is rooted in reality. And it calls out for you to come aboard. In the years to come, I believe that historians will record this. That in the watershed year 1968, America, in a time of crisis, responded as it has responded before, with new ideas, with great traditions, with a new alignment, and with the fresh hope that comes from a new unity.